Hello, and welcome to Little Fish. This is the bonus Monday episode where we put down our facts from the last 7 days and we get to chill out, sit back, and really enjoy the facts that you've been sending us in. My name is Dan Schreiber. I'm sitting here with Andrew Hunter-Murray and Anna Tashinsky. And Andy, you've been going through the inbox, collecting the best gems sent into us this week. So let's begin.
Let's have a gem. This one goes out to, and when I say goes out to, I mean comes in from. Oh, dear. It's from Leah Mackay.
Okay.
So Leah's fact, well, she sent a couple of facts, actually, and they're slightly themed. Fact number one, women who pay for their coffee or meal on a first date tend to display more interest in matrimony. And then she adds a secondary fact to that, which is that Leap Day is no longer the only day that a woman can ask a man to marry her. And by the way, Ryan, Leah has something to ask you right now.
This is huge.
I think this is the first fish proposal.
Are we meant to leave a blank space now for her to...
I hope Leah's paused the podcast at that moment.
Oh, wait, are we not asking?
I think Leah should be the one to ask. Okay. I mean, they'll have turned it back on by now and we'll know. Well, we don't know now what's happened as a result of this. But Leah, that's from Leah Mackay.
Wow. That's amazing.
Isn't that nice?
Wow. Congratulations or commiserations.
Oh, wow. Oh, yes.
This is exciting, isn't it?
So exciting.
I really hope that they've listened to this in like a good moment of their day.
Yeah.
You can have bad moments, can't you, as couples, where you sit down
and... Oh, should we put a podcast on? What a stupid idea.
I don't think you'd choose to put this podcast on in the middle of a huge argument, knowing what was going to be on it. Or do they not know when we're going to sneak it in?
I don't know if Leah knows when we're going to put this out.
You... absolutely have to tell her.
I should probably warn her.
That is insane.
Okay, I'll warn her. Oh my God, God.
She's been waiting 10 years. She just missed one episode. She forgot about it. I can't propose any other way.
Well, look, I hope that we can say congratulations to you, Leah and Ryan.
Yes.
Please do email in podcast@qi.com. And actually, any other big life moments, maybe conception. We're happy to...
The moment of? Or...
Yeah. We're happy to soundtrack that with a fact.
Bit like when Tudor kings and queens first had sex, they had like a group of people around them monitoring it. We could be like that.
You're suggesting we record an episode while they're doing it?
Yeah.
Okay. In the same room.
Okay.
Do you reckon?
That's interesting. It certainly is interesting, Andy. All right, well, let's get another fact. Anna, have you got one?
Well, this is going to be a bit of a damp squib,
isn't it? I know,
you've really
saved the best for first.
And yet, is this the best for second? It's from Izzy Turner. Here's a fact for you. In 1703, the High Sheriff of County Cork in Ireland was split between two men, the High Sheriff Hood, I guess, split between two men named Dick Cox and Willie Supple. That's just to get us back into down the line fish facts. It's absolutely beautiful.
Potential names for any newborn children coming your way, Leah.
Willie Supple.
Is that what you want in a Willie?
It can't hurt.
That's very good.
Yeah. Something to put on the Tinder profile.
That's really good.
Very nice. I've got a fact here that's been sent in by PJ Neal. And the fact is Barilla, the pasta company, Barilla, has a Spotify account with 10 different playlists. Each of their playlists is named after a specific type of pasta, spaghetti, you know, linguine. Mm-hmm. And the length of the playlist is the exact length of the time you need to cook that pasta.
Yes.
So if you're doing penne, you would fire up the 11-minute pleasant melancholy penne playlist.
Wonderful.
And I've got them all here. There's absolute carbonara, mixtape spaghetti, boom bap fusilli. You know, it's all good.
Brilliant. That's really good. Shall I give you another one?
Yeah, give it to us.
This one comes in from Dick Berg from the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. No relation, we presume, to, what was it, Hugh Penis and...
Willy Boobies. Willy Supple. Dick Cox and Willy Supple.
Dick Berg from the Netherlands writes, this is about the name of the Lidl supermarket, okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not one of my name things. It's just a great fact. The name of Lidl comes from a guy called Ludwig Lidl, who was a retired school teacher and painter who I think was friends with a parent of the founder of Lidl, right? So Dieter Schwarz was the founder of Lidl. And in 1973, he was setting up this supermarket, but he didn't want to call it Schwarzmarkt, which he should have done if he was calling it, you know, his shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that means black market. Schwarzmarkt. So instead, he just thought Lidl is a good, short, powerful word, and I'm going to buy for 1,000 marks the name from Ludwig Lidl.
Wow.
So that's the guy who...
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's Ludwig's surname now?
I think he got to keep it, I believe.
He doesn't have to give it up.
No. Okay. And the company, in fact, was founded in the 1930s before they renamed it as the supermarket.
Yeah.
But the original company was called Schwarz Lebensmittel Sortiment Großhandlung.
I think that is his new surname, isn't it? It was a swap.
Yeah.
That's very good. Yeah. Anna, let's get one from you.
Yes, this, I think, is one of my favourite facts I've ever had. It is bang up my street. This is from Tom Ween, or Tom Wayne, W-E-I-N. And he says, if you're ever in an argument with Senegalese footballer El Hadji Diouf, you can diffuse the tension immediately by calling him brainless. Now, this is part of a West African tradition, which I'm definitely looking into. Keep an eye on further podcasts for facts about this, because it's part of a West African tradition of joking kinship, in which particular ethnic groups have standard gags they make about other groups. So it's a socially approved thing, and you're not allowed to get annoyed. So there'll be one group of people in Senegal who are allowed to say, you're a wanker. Mm. And you're not allowed to get pissed off because it just shows how close you are. And it's used to get people to calm down. So if you're having a fight, weirdly, the way you can diffuse the tension is to say, you tosser. And they have to say, oh, the joking kinship thing. You win.
That's really good.
It's so amazing.
You twat.
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
I'm just going to take it. Yeah. You nailed it. Yeah, that's our joking kinship.
Moron twat.
Like, no, you don't have moron. I'm like, offended now.
Selfish, okay. You know, greedy.
No, it's not just it's not just your feelings.
Every word you want to... My dad calls me dickhead, and that's with affection.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I'd need a double check, but
does he call anyone else that, or is it just for you?
Oh, all the arseholes in our local area are called dickhead by him as well. So I don't know why he's grouped me with them, but yeah, it's a
wow.
Oh, you dickhead.
Yeah, I mean that's, but yeah, we do some dickheading in our family.
Yeah.
But it's so cool that this is like written into law, L-O-R-E, and he does say that in at least one recorded case, they persuaded a rebel group to release hostages just because people told the right jokes. And as he says, Diouf is from the Serer group, which means the Peul people are allowed to call him brainless.
Wow, lovely.
Very cool.
Amazing.
Yeah. Love it.
Very cool.
Really good.
We seem to be on a little name theme going on here, so I'll read this one here, which is Sophie Williams writes in, hi Fish, NHL player, so National Hockey League player, Steve Hines plays with the sweater number 57.
Very good.
Because there are 57 varieties.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is that known in the NHL? What, is that America or Canada?
It's Canada, right? Canada. It's probably in America as well, but I know it more as a Canadian thing. Okay. Yeah, so that's a thing. He was 57, and I don't think he was granted the number to begin with, 57. He asked for it, and the first team he played for said no, and then he eventually got it.
Oh, wait, so he was asking specifically because of the Hines connection?
Yeah.
That's actually even funnier. I thought it was just coincidence.
Mm. No, he asked for it specifically.
But he's not connected to the family.
No,
because they were. I mean, they were millionaires. I think they may have been billionaires. Actually, the Heinz heirs.
That makes sense. Billions of beans have been sold.
Yeah.
Yes.
It does make sense.
Does make sense.
And they do other things too.
There's another player who plays for the NHL who wears the number 22, and that's Jordan Tutu.
Really good.
And again, I feel like he's had other numbers, and that's the one that he's chased. I like it when teams let their players do that. Do you remember we did a fact years ago about how Ray Kroc bought a baseball team, the Padres, and one of his first signings, even though the person was sort of past their peak as a player, was a guy whose nickname was Big Mac.
Oh, yeah.
And he brought him into the team.
Yes.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. Lost a whole lot of money for the investors.
He really did.
Nice to have the in joke.
Yeah. In jokes, they're worth more than actual wins,
definitely.
I would say. Yeah.
Good one, dickhead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. My dad can call me dickhead.
Sorry. Here's one from Shan Valvis from Sao Paulo. The first personality quiz was devised by Marcel Proust.
Interesting.
So I looked into this one. He actually didn't come up with it. He did answer it. He's the most famous early recipient of this quiz or partaker in it. Because the Victorians, they had this hobby of writing a confession album.
Okay.
What's sounds that? It sounds, a diary?
No, it sounds a lot more fun than it is. Basically, you have to answer a list of questions, which is your chief characteristic, your main fault, your favorite occupation, your idea of happiness, you know, all of these. And it gets quite philosophical, you know, the more you get. It starts off with, what's your favorite color?
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't even answer that one, would you? Let alone, you're just tearing it
None
up at question one.
None of your business.
I prefer not to say. So this album that he answered, it belonged to his friend who was called Antoinette Faure. And basically, he lists a whole load of his, you know, most intimate and deep secrets in this questionnaire. So that was the first kind of popular parlor game version of a personality quiz.
That's interesting. Because there's a thing that's done, I think it's in Vanity Fair at the back, which is the Proust questionnaire.
Really? Oh, I mean, that'll be this.
Yeah.
That is this.
I think it's largely asking about books, or at least that's my memory. Maybe it's not, though. Maybe it's all about your favorite everything. Yeah, so that must be connected.
Yeah. It will absolutely be that. It's known as the Proust questionnaire these days.
And this is, and it's basically kind of, instead of a board game, you play a game where you answer these questions and then you talk about them. Interesting.
And all your friends have written, I think, in your confession album, all of their answers to the quiz.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, which is quite cool.
You, not to throw too much of your personal life in here, Anna, but you play a similar game to that that you got me to do.
Oh, Wheel of Life?
Yeah.
Gosh, shall I share the Wheel of Life?
Yeah, tell people.
Oh, this is, me and my friend compiled this about 20 years ago, and it's basically to work out how well your life is going. There are seven categories, and they are relationship, friends, house, job, self-improvement, health, so that covers your diet and your exercise, and another one, but you can make that one up yourself. And you go through them and you grade them out of seven, and then you look at your total score and you think, well, here's where I'm in trouble. I don't have a house. I hadn't realised before that was why I was unhappy, or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's great. Really fun.
And you and I have played it, Anna.
We
I
have.
Don't think I gave you anything.
No, it lasted about half a minute. Okay, I've got another one here. This is from Anders Nissen, and this is that sharks can bite you in their sleep. And this does seem to be one particular case in 2005 in New Mexico, which recorded its only, so far, shark attack incident because it's landlocked. But it took place at the Biopark Aquarium. And there's a diver called Ken Pitts who needed six stitches. The email says sustained minor injuries that required six stitches. Mm. Which I actually would say that's moderate injuries. When a captive sand tiger shark bumped into him. And sand tiger sharks, if you picture them, they've got teeth that are sticking out. So the sand tiger shark was sleeping, wandered over, bumped into him and bit him with his, or scraped along him with his teeth.
Oh, okay, yeah. So it didn't, because sometimes it's like, say, like you pet a sleeping dog and it suddenly, it has a reaction and it bites you. And I thought you meant like that.
No, didn't even have a reaction. You don't need to let sleeping sharks lie. They're fine with it, stroke away. But this one did inadvertently bite him. But weirdly, this event was considered a provoked attack, which seems kind of unfair.
Maybe you just got to fill something in on the form. I don't know.
Yeah.
What's an unprovoked attack?
Yeah, I don't know.
If that is provoked, how much gentler do you possibly have to be than just being there?
You guys been bit by many things?
No.
Yeah, I don't think I've.
Children?
Yes, I have been bit by a child. Not my own child.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
What did you do?
Well, you've got to put them down afterwards. They're too dangerous to roam the streets.
At least with any other animal, you're allowed to really shake it.
Yeah.
It off.
Yeah.
And kick it. And all of that. Yeah. You can't do that when it's trying.
And of course, they go lockjaw on you and you've got to really got to...
Pencil up the bum. Do dogs do that if you stroke them while they're asleep?
I think you can freak a dog out and it turns and bites. Yeah.
I've never had that.
Yeah.
I've never touched a sleeping dog. Because I listen to the sayings.
Okay, here's another one. I got an email from someone called Ed Robinson, who says, you mentioned recently that we can't say for certain that Charles Darwin didn't ride the tube. So we spoke about this. There's an overlap between the beginning of the tube and the end of days of Charles Darwin. Mm-hmm. So to my knowledge, we also can't say for certain that Karl Marx didn't have a fruit pastel, as they were invented in 1881, and he died in 1883. Actually, I think he died in 1882, but still
it's a year.
Works.
It doesn't take that long to eat a fruit pastel.
Yeah.
Wow. Do we know what killed him? I mean...
Apologies. Sorry, no, that's my fault. We're talking about Karl Marx there. Darwin died 1882. Sorry.
So Darwin and Marx could have both had a fruit pastel.
Yeah.
They could have died having a fruit pastel eating competition, in fact.
Would that kill you?
Karl Marx, well, it depends how well the competition goes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you win the fruit pastel eating competition, you may die.
Of diabetes or something.
Of just fruit pastels. Yeah,
death by fruit pastel, of course. Yeah. It was very common one, wasn't it?
I looked into other things that Darwin might have been able to experience.
Yes.
1882, Darwin could have had Heinz ketchup on his chips.
Cool.
When he was eating. He could have had a sip of absolute vodka while he was eating those chips with Heinz ketchup.
Nice.
Of course, back in those days, Heinz ketchup just came with the big number one on the bottle because they'd only invented one variety. Yeah.
He also could have been walking around in denim Levi jeans.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes. Darwin could have had a pair of Levi jeans.
You don't picture it, do you? Sort of cut-offs or with a hole ripped in the knee, do you think he'd go for?
And do you know what's weird? He would have known about jeans in his lifetime, Levi's, but he wouldn't have known about jeans in genetics in his lifetime.
Yes. Oh, dear. What kind of genes did Darwin know about? That's
a
quiz question.
Because that's so good.
That came years later. Someone had found the foundations of genes, so genetics is dated while he was still alive, but no word was put to it. Nothing was properly published.
Charles Darwin goes out for a night on the vodka. On his way home, in his jeans, has some chips with Heinz ketchup on.
Yeah.
And then gets the tube home eating his fruit pastels.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because what's the equivalent now of doing that? Like, so Dame Vera Lynn, I think, has only very recently died.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Dame Vera Lynn could have got a Lime bike to the vape shop and paid for it with some Bitcoin.
Yes.
Yeah. I've got one more.
Mm-hmm.
Last one from me. This is from Dominique Turenne, who writes, I'm a long-time listener, first-time emailing from Montreal.
For those listening at home, you have to understand there's always a pause afterwards because Andy's mouth drops to the floor when he hears these exotic locations that have been sent to
us. He's from Darwin's era. He can't believe the technology exists.
What other podcast?
To hear
what other podcast gets emails from Montreal, Sao Paulo?
Just loads of them.
I've got one from St. Albans, but like just stunning. Wow. Okay, right. Dominique Turenne writes, Montreal, by the way, home of the world record for most tickets sold for a podcast recording, 20,986. Then she adds, slightly snippily, when will you do a live show here? Well, as soon as we clear that 20,000-seater venue, as soon as we get it booked, we'd love to do that. Anyway, Dominique wanted to write about the fact that Canada has icebreaker hovercraft.
Mm.
How cool is that?
Oh, wow.
Basically, when the ice melts, big chunks of ice can sometimes jam up the mouths of streams or rivers or whatever. You know, it's a problem because that leads to flooding of towns and farmland or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they deploy the ice hovercraft.
Mm.
And they just hovercraft over and blast down. And the vibrations break up the ice into smaller chunks.
Very clever.
I think they've got two of them. And just wicked.
So good.
Just a cool invention.
Yeah. At what height do you stop being a hovercraft and start being a helicopter? Because I feel like helicopters could do, they could get low enough, couldn't they?
I suppose it's whenever the rotor blade has moved from the bottom to the top. That's when you're a helicopter.
And there's horrible budget helicopter experience that you've signed up to. Are you sure this is, looks like a boat?
It does occasionally leave the water though. Yeah, there's a big wave. So that's
have you been
great.
On a hovercraft?
Sorry?
Have you been on a hovercraft?
I don't know. There used to be ones crossing the channel, didn't there? And I used to go across the channel when I was a kid. Maybe I went in one. Maybe I didn't. I didn't give a shit.
Have you?
Hong Kong had hovercrafts to get us between islands. Yeah.
I recently went on a bike ride past the first ever international hovercraft port.
Amazing.
The first ever international hovercraft port. I cycled past it.
Does anything interesting happen?
It's very near you, Dan.
Is it?
It's Pegwell Bay.
No way.
Yeah.
Now he's interested.
Now it's relevant to dance.
Because actually it's really interesting, Anna.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. Anna.
I'll move to Margate. Maybe I'll see the light.
Okay, well, that's it for your facts. Thank you, everyone, for sending them in. But before we wrap up today's episode, we have one more thing to do, which is hand out our latest batch of facts to the custodians of the Clubfish tier, known as Friend of the Podcast. Who wants to start?
I will kick off and I will donate a fact to Laura Grace. And that is that the Natural History Museum is stopping moths from destroying the exhibits by turning them gay. Very clear. Actually, I remember this is one of yours, but it's one of mine.
It's yours.
Yeah. Everything good I do, I attribute to you, Dan. This is cool, isn't it? Moths eating them up. So you turn them gay. They don't have kids. So the kids can't eat them up.
Yeah.
How do you turn...
Oh, yeah, no, that's the hard bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think they give them some foot hormones, like spray some pheromones on them or something, don't they?
I think you're right. They spray male moths with female hormones.
Exactly.
So they spend all their time trying to mate with each other. Is that turning them gay? It's more like dragging up male moths as females.
Yeah, you're right. It's tricking heterosexual moths into performing a homosexual act.
I wonder if that's still the method, because this is obviously an old fact. There must
times,
be
what times have changed, are you saying, as in culturally?
Someone might have come into the Natural History Museum the next year and said, actually, we've got a different method. Yeah. We're going to have to stop this whole idea now.
This mad idea, and we can just actually spray this moth killer around.
You can't do anything anymore. Yeah. Okay. Shall I do one?
Yeah.
Okay, this fact goes out to Jane. Jane with a Y, right in the middle. And the fact is this. The word marvelous has fallen in use from 155 times per million in the 1990s to only 2 times per million today. That is a catastrophic decline.
It's sad, isn't it?
Almost down to 1% of its former range and habitat. I think that's tragic. I use the word marvelous all the time.
You'll be astonished
to know.
I do as well. And I've got a theory about all these facts about like use of word has declined. Yeah. I think we don't write them. But we still use them. So these are always taken from like Google Ngrams, aren't they? Or things like that, which see how many times we've mentioned them. So maybe it's fallen out of fashion in our high literature. But Andy and I, half of our conversations are the word marvelous. No one's recording that, are they?
I wonder who that... I can, in my head, hear Stephen Fry saying it a lot.
Yeah.
Marvelous.
Oh, marvelous.
Yeah, me too. Okay, here's another one. This is going out to Ryan Gilgalan. Your fact is, to prepare for China's National Day, 100,000 pigeons receive anal security checks to make sure they're not carrying anything suspicious. That, Ryan, can now be framed on your wall.
Yeah. Enjoy. Ryan will have had his certificate months ago for this fact. 100,000 pigeons receiving anal security checks.
And is it just the one person, do we remember, with a very small finger?
Oh, actually, we have more detail in the archive. I think they get, cavity searches twice. Just when they think they've got through the first test, there's another one.
Is that in case they've hidden it up a different hole? Or?
I don't know. But they're all pigeons that are released for the National Day. And again, this was a few years ago. Maybe things have changed. But I hope they haven't.
Do you think the anal security is as necessary?
I don't see what's changed to make it less necessary.
And what the deal is that why are the pigeons? They're used a lot in National Day, aren't they? So they're released and they do amazing performances.
Exactly,
Or they fly into the air and they look really cool.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why are they trying to get in? It's not like they're going to a gig because they love Taylor Swift or whatever.
But they shouldn't be. But what if they're smuggling something?
Yeah. No, you've got to check them if they're coming.
You've got to check. Let's do another one.
This is for Cam B, enjoy this little nugget. Only 28% of people know when they're being flirted with.
Cam B, what a great fact that is on you.
Yes, Cam.
Looks really nice. Have you been exercising your fact? Cam, I don't know if I'm flirting with you. Sorry.
I remember we actually did this on QI last year, I think, as well. And it's interesting because who do you think is less aware that they're being flirted with?
Women.
Women are less aware that they're being flirted with. And that is because...
Men are bad at flirting?
Men are too subtle.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what's always said about us, isn't it?
I know, it seems weird.
Yeah.
The study looked at it and it found that men actually, when it comes to the crux of it, you're too scared of rejection to actually make it clear enough. So most women have no idea. So all those missed opportunities, lads, just get out there, you know, to pull your trousers down, whatever it takes.
Pull your trousers down.
I think it's pretty clear if I say to a woman, would you like to come with me to the site of the world's first international hoverport? How much more blatant do you want me to get?
No, you're absolutely
right. I've practically got my tongue hanging out by saying that. It's outrageous.
So many women. Turns out he just didn't fancy me. No, he just liked hoverports.
And it's just me and Andy again hanging out by the hoverport. I think I have no idea if I'm being flirted with in my single days, and I was terrible at flirting. I was sucked on both sides.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it still led to a pretty good result.
All right, next fact.
Let's have another fact. This one goes out to Robbie Brennan. Robbie, your fact is that ancient Sumerian beer was as thick as porridge and was drunk through a straw. And we talked, I can't remember if this is the one where we talked about the porridge drawer. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
You would pour your porridge into a drawer if you were a Scottish crofter or whatever, and then you could just cut off a slice. And I tried to do this recently.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was it your underwear drawer? One of your wife's drawers?
No, I didn't try and do the drawer thing, but I had some porridge which had gone, like, it hadn't worked out properly. And I thought, I know, I'll just make a porridge. I'll just turn this into porridge, drawer porridge, like flapjack.
Oh, yeah, nice.
And it doesn't work. I just thought it happened naturally that porridge turns into flapjacks.
If you put it in a drawer, leave it for 3 years.
I'm so stupid.
I just say that Anne Miller, friend of the podcasters, who's been on the podcast, her grandparents had a porridge drawer.
Did they?
Really? That's the case, yeah, in her house. In there.
Nice.
That's cool. All right, another fact to give out. This one is going out to Nessie.
Surely not.
Come on, Dan.
After all these years.
Imagine this is how we prove Nessie exists. They're part of Club Fish. Nessie, your fact is baby turtles coordinate when they're going to hatch from within their eggshells.
Wonderful.
An amazing,
because so
as far as you know, as a baby turtle, you're the only life in the universe.
Yeah.
Because you're inside a shell.
Yeah.
It's almost like if you went to a campsite, you put your tent up, it turned night, and then everyone arrived and put their tents up, and you just started going, hello? And someone's like, hello? And you're like, oh, what? There's other people in the campsite, but I'm in my tent. I don't know how many. I don't know who's there.
That's good.
We now have to invent a language to talk to each other.
And we all have to get to the riverbank together for safety in numbers to avoid the predators.
Mm-hmm. What?
Which is what the turtles are doing.
What campsite are you going to?
Sorry, I get a really horrible campsite.
You're at the Hunger Games campsites.
Sorry, I was trying to drag it back towards the fact I shouldn't have done it.
Don't be stupid.
You need to say when you're exiting a metaphor, there needs to be an alarm.
When I'm on a roll, join.
Here's a fact for Tessa Rask. It's written as all one word, but I assume it's two, or it could be Tesserask.
Hmm.
Anyway, the fact is that Henrik Ibsen's last words were to his nurse. She said he seemed to be looking better. He replied, on the contrary. And then he died.
The next day. That's one of those facts that's perfect until you get to the final three words.
Yeah. He held on. Yeah. All the family coming in, trying to chat to him. No, I've done my last words. They were good.
Mm.
Yeah, I wonder if this is a true one. Haven't actually checked it because a lot of last words not true. And this is Dan's fact, so...
How dare you?
So probably true.
Don't frame it, Tessa, just in case.
That's last words are always really fun.
They're wonderful.
Yeah.
My favorite of all time. We did it on the show, is the Roald Dahl one. He had a nurse by his side. He had his family there. And he said something really poignant, like, the thing I'm going to miss most is all of you. Beautiful last words. Closed his eyes. And as he appeared to be going, the nurse gave him an injection of some drug to sort of help him slip seamlessly into death. And as she put the needle in, he went, oh, fuck! And then died.
Yeah.
The last words are all dull. And I found a big biography of him the other day, and there's more detail to it in that book.
Brilliant.
That's definitely real.
So
that's
true. Good.
As is the Ibsen.
Don't
worry.
Yeah. Frame away.
Let's get one more.
All right. This last one goes out to Kim Dachtler. And the fact is, I love this so much, in Peru, depictions of the Last Supper show Jesus and his disciples eating a guinea pig. It must be very big as a guinea pig. It must be a big guinea pig.
It must mean one each.
Or, well, we know he could do his thing, obviously.
Multiplying the guinea pigs.
Yeah, exactly.
Do your thing with the guinea pig.
Loads of the fishes and the guinea pigs. They were just edited down a little bit. It's not, yeah. And this is because eating guinea pig is a big thing. James has eaten guinea pig in Peru. Not a euphemism. I don't even know what it would be a euphemism for.
Didn't when we had Michael Palin on the show, he say, God, I don't know if it was guinea pigs, but they were the size of cars back in the day.
I think they were. No, back in the day. And when we say back in the day, a while ago.
Yeah, right? But maybe there's an in-between between then, yes. Jesus,
2000
and now.
Years ago, it was actually the size of a mini.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Apparently you can cut them into five at the table.
Can you?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So only would have had to have been two and then...
Yeah, two and a bit. We'll have three guinea pigs for the table. And then I actually only have one piece of the guinea pig. So is it all right if I don't pay the full 1 in 30? Is that okay? Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. Congratulations to Kim, Tesserak, Nessie, Robbie, Cam, Ryan, Jane, Laura. You are now the custodians of these eight facts. frame them on your wall. Don't double check if they're right or wrong and enjoy. If you want to get your own fact to put on your wall, and we do send out a digital certificate, it looks really cool. All you need to do is join the highest tier of Clubfish, and Clubfish is at patreon.com/clubfish. Alternatively, in the first half of this show, we were reading out your facts. And you can send those in to us at podcast@qi.com. Andy goes through every single email and he will pick out the best of them to bring to this show. So do that and hear your fact here on our show. One more congratulations to Leah and Ryan.
We think.
Yeah. Hopefully. And thank you for allowing us to be part of that big moment in your life.
And we want to perform at the wedding.
Well, do we?
Okay. Yeah.
Songs or a podcast? What do you want?
I don't mind, really.
Okay.
I just want to be involved.
Okay.
All right. I didn't sign up to that. Well, okay. Well done anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, everyone, we're going to be back again next week with more of your facts. Tune in on Friday to Big Fish, and we'll see you then. Goodbye.